There was an article in the newspaper this past week, which I thought was very, very interesting, and it, on the surface, looks quite a simple thing. It looks quite something that really Mrs. Sherry Blair made some kind of a political, not political, but a gaffe in her dress code, and actually went and met the Pope in white rather than the traditional black or some other colour. And this is actually the approach of the paper. But when you consider that I believe Mrs. Blair spent something like £7,000 on her hair alone in the last election campaign, she had a personal hairdresser going around with her, and she is meticulous in her dress sense. She's a barrister, she would undoubtedly have received information not only from her own people, the courtiers and so on within the government, but also within the Pope's entourage as well. Then it starts to become quite interesting, this particular news item, because it says here, it was put on page 14 of the Telegraph last Sabbath, and it says, "White outfit, wrong occasion, Cherie." And it says, "Europe's royals obey the rules, but the Prime Minister's wife breaks the Vatican protocol in meeting with the Pope." It says, "Sherry Blair provoked surprise in the Vatican and the ire of a Roman Catholic MP yesterday by wearing all white to meet the Pope, a privilege normally reserved to Catholic queens." This is why I say we need to take notice. We need to sit up. When we see something like this, we say, hey, hang on, there's something else going on. "The Vatican convention is that females meeting the pontiff should wear black, preferably with a black veil or a mantilla. When the Queen met Pope John Paul II 6 years ago, she observed the code meticulously. Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, wore black but omitted the veil. By contrast, Mrs. Blair, a staunch Catholic, chose to exercise the privilege de blanc, usually granted only to the wives of Catholic monarchs. Her breach of the protocol was surprising, since she has been kept closely to the Church's dress code in the past." This is why I say, you know, when this happens, it seems just such an innocuous thing, something that is totally without any real meaning at all. And yet, when you know the kind of history and the historical aspects that this particular event would be looked upon within the Vatican, and remember, their history doesn't just go back a few hundred years, it goes back thousands of years. "Mrs. Blair may not have worn a hat to the funeral of Diana, Princess of Wales, but she mourned the passing of Pope Paul II in a mantilla. Technically, only three women should wear white in the presence of the Pope. They're the Queen Sophia of Spain, Queen Paola of Belgium, and Sophie Charlotte, the wife of the Grand Duke Jean of Luxembourg. Queen Sophie exercised her privilege in a meeting with a previous Pope in 2003. Anne Widdecombe, the former Tory minister and a convert to Catholicism, was scathing about Mrs. Blair. Even the Queen wore black to meet the Pope, she said. This shows that she has a very grand idea of herself." Is that all it is? Do they not go ahead and communicate with the Pontiff's office before going down there? "She's a Catholic. She knows what the tradition is when meeting the Pope. She obviously thinks that she's the First Lady. My message is to her that you are not a Catholic queen, my dear, and you never will be." Well, my message to Mrs. Anne Widdecombe, with respect, is that she may not know what she's talking about, because it talks about 10 kings in Europe. And I'm not, you know, when we look at what Mr. Armstrong said to Franz Josef Strauss, what he said to Otto von Habsburg, it wasn't the case that you are going to be the beast. I mean, that wasn't what he said. But he said, look, you are going to have control. You're going to have political clout within Europe. I perceive that this is the direction in which you're going. And it was the direction in which both of those men were going, even though they're dead now. But the direction could be seen. And the direction which we can see here, we need to sit up and take notice. We need to understand, and we need to realize this is not just a social gaffe that happened. "Mrs. Blair was in Rome for a church-organized conference entitled Vanishing Youth, Solidarity with Children and Young People in an Age of Turbulence. She was invited as an expert and remained afterwards for a private meeting with the Pope, a a spokesman for the Vatican declined to reveal what they had discussed. So it wasn't just a case of just a meeting that happened to take place. It was something that was private. Now, back in Monday, April the 2nd, there was another article, again stuck on a page way into the paper, that said the Catholic Masses for the Blairs at number 10. Tony Blair and his family have been celebrating Masses conducted by a Roman Catholic priest at Downing Street. It emerged yesterday. Now that's the Prime Minister and his wife. The Prime Minister is a High Church Anglican. His wife Cherie is Catholic, and the couple's four children have been raised within that faith. The Downing Street Press Office declined to comment on the reports, which it regarded as a private matter. It's understood that the Masses were conducted by Father Michael Steed, an advisor to the Archbishop of Westminster. And it went on about the Prime Minister, but somewhere I think it says in here, some constitutional experts have said that Mr. Blair would have faced difficulties were he to convert while in the office because his responsibilities include appointing Anglican bishops. Anyway, although he's saying he only attends it with his family, there's another article in the Times, dated April the 29th, of Cherie meets the Pope, a speculation grows that Blair will convert. And the indication is, it says, Cherie Blair had a private audience with the Pope yesterday amid growing speculation that the Prime Minister will take the final steps towards becoming a Roman Catholic. Earlier, she delivered an unprecedented tribute to the Franciscan friar, Father Michael Seed, the priest who regularly conducts services at number 10. It's widely believed that he will be the person who helps Tony Blair to complete a journey of faith that he appears to have begun years ago. Before entering Downing Street, Mr. Blair regularly attended Mass at Westminster Cathedral. He goes on about his children. Yesterday, Mrs. Blair talked to the Pope after attending a Mass. Father Steed, known as Priest of the Stars for his record of converting politicians, has been visiting Downing Street for 5 years to celebrate Mass for the Blairs. He received an award yesterday from Sternberg of the Three Faiths Forum in recognition of his work. He said he declined to comment on the Prime Minister's future religious plans, but confirmed for the first time that the Downing Street services do take place. The main reasons for the privacy, he said, was security. Now, again, we need to understand that when you see, particularly when you see something such as that protocol, what appears a lapse of protocol and yet isn't, this is significant. Turn over to Revelation 17. Revelation 17, and just remind ourselves. I know we read it over and over again, but we do need to keep in mind who we're actually talking about here. We find in Revelation 17, verse 1, it says, there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked, now the seven vials being the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying unto me, coming come hither, for I will show unto you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters. Now if you look at verse 15, you can see what the waters are, and these are, this says verse 15, the waters which you saw where the whore sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. It is a Catholic organization. Catholic meaning universal, worldwide, whatever you want to call it. With whom, notice this waters, with whom the king, or sorry, this whore, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. It's interesting, in Matthew 24, at the end of Matthew 24, just before it goes into Matthew 25, it talks about these people within the church who are drunk, who have eaten and drinking with the drunken. And in this section here, it goes into verse 12, the ten horns which you saw are ten kingdoms, or kings, which have received no kingdom yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. Now there's ten governmental positions, ten kings, ten offices, ten groupings, whatever it may be, that are going to receive power within this European final resurrection, this final resurrection of the European Holy Roman Empire. They have one mind and will give their power and their strength to the beast. So there'll be a leader over the ten. Now, who that leader is, we don't know. There's been speculation in the past. We can speculate, but we simply don't know. But we do need to be aware that when we see something like this, there is a recognition that Mr. Blair is to play some kind of a leading role politically within the European theatre as far as the Pope is concerned. Another interesting aside, for this is coming from the 17th of March, was the BBC's chief is the most powerful Catholic layman in Britain. Mark Thompson, the Director General of the BBC, is the most influential Roman Catholic layperson in Britain, according to an analysis by the Catholic Weekly, The Tablet. So what you see within the BBC is also going to be biased in a Catholic direction. Now, he's not going to be able to get away with everything, but he still will, in fact, have a bias there. And you can see how there is a direction that, I think I've quoted this before, the decadent world is in the grip of Satan, says the Pope. Pope Benedict said last night that the world was in the grip of Satan and prayed that the mankind would open its eyes to the filth around us. Now, the direction that filth is coming from is from the Western side. That is where it's coming from. You can also see the direction in which things are going. This is coming from the 6th of this month, where Britain may give up the EU veto on justice matters. It says Britain is considering giving up its national veto over sensitive decisions involving cross-border police and judicial cooperation in Europe. Traditionally, Britain has jealously guarded its national sovereignty over criminal justice matters between members of the European Union, and it goes on to say that this is, you know, not just under threat, but about to be overturned. At the same time, as we see this direction that is taking place, Mr. Olmert in Israel has now recently just come into power as the new Prime Minister. And it says, after breaking the mould of Israeli politics by leading a centrist party to election victory, Ehud Olmert rang more changes yesterday by installing a government led by politicians with only a limited military experience. Now, if you look at the government of Israel normally, it is a military-dominated government. Now, it appears that it's not. It says the appointment raised derisive sneers from the military establishment, but Mr. Olmert, who worked on the Israeli Army Journal during his national service, was determined not to be hamstrung by convention. In another break with the past, he used a speech into Parliament yesterday to drop Israel's claim to all the biblical land of Israel, including the occupied West Bank. Now that, again, is a significant situation. The question is, though, what will happen? Now, there is a direction that Israel is going, and it's a liberal direction. And the indication on the end, as far as the end time is concerned, is that there is going to be a backlash. There'll be some kind of backlash, because you're looking at sacrifices starting within around the Temple Mount. There's got to be a religious backlash against what is happening in Israel at the moment. To give you an idea of what, in fact, is happening, this is coming from a news roundup by the Emmet News Service Weekly update, and it says on number 5 here, this Ian actually sent me this, it says Israel's tourism ministry is working to make Tel Aviv a homosexual destination. It says Israel's Minister of Tourism is aggressively working to make Tel Aviv a destination for the homosexual travel market. The ministry's representative to that market told Israel's Yenet online newspaper that weekend packages from Europe are already being marketed. Israel will be represented at major travel conferences for the homosexual market, and a special website promoting travel to the homosexual community will soon be launched. Tel Aviv's Gay and Lesbian Union is bidding to host the world's largest homosexual parade, Euro Pride. Yeah, the Pride of Sodom. Now, if again, is God going to just go ahead and allow that to go on without any kind of punishment? Is San Francisco is going to continue? It has for many years. So did Sodom for many years. But eventually a point was reached where God intervened and put a stop to it. And it was the pride of Sodom. It wasn't just Sodom. It was the pride that was there as well. The American homosexual community alone is estimated to spend $54 billion each year on tourism. Now, the kind of backlash that we're looking at that could take place is something that Ian Henderson sent me. And this, again, is coming from the Temple Institute, an interview that was done with somebody from there. And it's coming, and it says that about Passover sacrifices are still obligatory. It says, it is not a question of maybe or if, says the Temple Institute's rabbi, Yitzhak Ariel. Bringing the Passover, or Paschal, sacrifice is a Torah obligation incumbent upon the people of Israel these very days. So this is the thinking behind the religious rite. But again, what I'm saying is that there is a current move in the country away from the religious right. It is towards, you know, homosexuality in Tel Aviv. It is towards letting the West Bank go. And yet here, when we're looking at what the religious rites say, it says, from the moment that a Jew stands on the Temple Mount and the site of the Holy Temple is under our control, the Jewish people are immediately obligated to bring this sacrifice. Now, they're talking about Passover. Now, turn over to Daniel chapter 12. And let's just make sure we understand something. If this happened, and Daniel, and the Passover was actually celebrated on the Temple Mount, and then the authorities clamped down on it, would that be the fulfillment of Daniel? The answer is no, it wouldn't. Because we'll go on and just see. It says, Rabbi Ariel said, after the destruction of the first temple, when the Jews began returning from Babylonia to the Holy Land, they brought the Paschal sacrifice during the course of 22 years, even though there was no holy temple. So this could be done, and they recognize it can be done without a temple. It says, there is currently no genuine impediment to bringing the Paschal sacrifice. It says also, it says, they were all considered ritually impure because there was no red heifer by which to become pure, yet they still brought it. And this Temple Institute is working towards making all the implements necessary for a full sacrificial system to be present. Here in Daniel chapter 12, notice verse 8, it says, and I heard, but I did not understand. He said, oh my Lord, when shall the end of these things be? What are these things we're looking for? And he said, you go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up, they're sealed until the time of the end. We're at that time, we know what these words mean, we know how it focuses and revolves around verse 13, where it says he'll stand in the lot at the end of the days, so you're counting back from that time. And it says, verse 10, many will be purified and made white and tried, the wicked will do wickedly, none of the wicked will understand, but the wise being purified and tried and tested, which we have been and are being, the wise will understand, they shall understand. And it ties immediately, you know, 10 virgins, 5 were foolish and 5 were wise. And the wise had oil in their lamps, they were in contact with God. That's the criteria, that's what we need to be looking at. And from the time that the daily, it's the evening and morning sacrifice, it's not the Passover. So Passover could actually start and stop, and this would not be fulfilled. It's the daily sacrifice be taken away, and the abomination that makes desolate set up, that's the armies surrounding Jerusalem, there will be 1,290 days. So that is what we're looking for. It's not just the Passover. But when we look at the situation within Israel, when we look at this gay pride that is taking place, that they're trying to angle for within Tel Aviv, it's interesting, if there's one place that the, say, Iran would attack, as far as nuclear weapons or whatever, or if the suicide bombers managed to get in with nuclear weapons, it would be Tel Aviv. It's the commercial capital of Israel. So some things are still happening, and sometimes we do need to look between the lines a little bit, particularly when we see what looks like a social gaffe, but it's not just a social gaffe of wearing white before the Pope. We need to be aware that that was sanctioned by the papal office. It had to be. There's no other explanation for it. And therefore, when we're looking at the Blairs, we need to be looking very, very carefully in the concerns of Europe, in the same way as Mr. Armstrong looked at, say, Franz Josef Strauss or whoever, even though he's an English Prime Minister. We still need to be very aware of this, the significance that is there.